Hello and welcome to the Muni Lowdown. My name is Paul Graves and I'm the managing editor for DebtWire Municipals. Today's podcast title is Proton Prites. I'm joined by senior reporter Simone Barabo. We'll be discussing proton therapy centers and their performance in the municipal market. Welcome back to the podcast, Simone.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So just a note to our audience, we're recording on the morning of Wednesday, January 29th. Simone, our focus is going to be on the financial challenges faced by proton therapy centers that are backed by municipal bonds. Before we examine their performance, what is proton therapy?
Proton therapy is basically very targeted radiation for cancer or for other tumors. They send a beam of protons right at a cancer to destroy the cells. It's an alternative to traditional X-ray radiation, which isn't as targeted. So with traditional radiation, patients are exposed to more radiation.
So with proton therapy being a type of radiation treatment, what are the advantages and disadvantages of proton therapy versus traditional radiation?
The advantages for certain types of cancers are that the radiation is targeted. So if you have a cancer that's near another vital organ, like head and neck cancers being near your brain or breast cancers being near your heart, you can avoid damage to those organs. The disadvantage is that it's a newer technology, so it's less tested. It's not clear if it prolongs lives compared to traditional radiation, according to the Mayo Clinic. And also, it's more expensive.
What are the characteristics of those getting treated with proton therapy in terms of ages, things of that matter?
I believe it can be anyone, but it's frequently used on children who obviously have more time to spend in their bodies than older people. So damage to a heart, for instance, that shows up decades down the line matters more the younger that you are. But it is also very often used on adults.
So what got you interested in investigating proton therapy centers?
Well, as you know, we report on distressed municipal debt here, and I was getting a bunch of regulatory alerts about defaults on proton treatment centers.
And how long have they been around?
The Food and Drug Administration approved proton therapy in the late 1980s as an alternative to traditional radiation, but it wasn't widely available. It still isn't that widely available, really. And of course, there have been advances since the late 1980s in proton therapy treatment.
And how many proton therapy centers are there around the country?
There are less than 50, according to the National Association for Proton Therapy. And in a country this size, that's not many. The average person is more than an hour and a half away from a proton therapy center, and one in six people live more than 4 hours away.
And why are proton therapy centers more expensive to set up than other technologies?
Well, it's an advanced technology. There are lots of capital needs, so you get high upfront costs. So by the time you see your first patient, by the time a center sees its first patient, they're pretty heavily in debt.
So for the benefit of our audience, typically we're here talking about muni bonds in the aspect of there may be a bridge, there may be a park, a stadium, there may be some other kind of capital project that's backed by taxes and revenues of some kind by a municipality, a nonprofit organization, et cetera. And then there are these projects, let's call them project finance type of deals, where they're unusual. They're not something typically backed by muni bonds, but in the case that nonprofit or that company has managed to get approval in that they've been able to demonstrate that these projects provide some sort of public benefit, and that public benefit entitles them to take advantage of tax exemption. So a proton therapy center would then have a what would be called a conduit issuer, which would be some sort of state agency that would issue bonds on their behalf. They'd still be the obligor, but they'd get the benefit of the tax exemption because, again, it provides a public benefit. So I just want to give that backdrop because we don't typically talk about these type of deals and just want to make it accessible to everybody. Back in 2017, we started covering proton therapy centers. And at the time, there were three issues that came up with these centers around the technology, the viability, and the medical reimbursement. The reimbursement climate for proton therapy was somewhat unpredictable and probably could make the case that that still remains the situation. And this uncertain payment climate relates to questions around the efficacy of proton beam therapy treatment. In other words, is it worth the additional costs versus traditional radiation that Simone talked about before? And then when it comes to third-party payers, they've restricted or dropped coverage, citing a lack of evidence demonstrating its superiority over alternatives. So Simone, is that serving as the backdrop? Several proton treatment centers financed with municipal bonds, as you already mentioned, have defaulted or show signs of financial strain in recent years. Can you elaborate a bit more on that?
Yeah, so there are a bunch. I'm not going to name all of them, otherwise it's just going to get into a list. But the ones that filed for bankruptcy, you get a good look at what went wrong. And a lot of the things are just what you just mentioned. So for instance, in the Provision Cares proton therapy bankruptcies, they listed three things going wrong. One was lower than expected reimbursement rates, lower than anticipated patient volume. And of course, these in theory could be tied with the lower reimbursement rates. If you can't get coverage, then you might not get the treatment, as well as the COVID-19 pandemic and a cyber attack. Now, the cyber attack was specific to the particular company, but the other factors were industry-wide. One of the most interesting filings I've read is the case of Proton International at the University of Alabama at Birmingham. In this case, according to the filings, they just closed up shop and abandoned their very expensive proton accelerator. So that's an extreme case. The bonds paid for this very expensive piece of equipment, and it was just left there.
So on the topic of reimbursements, what have states done to address this challenge?
There have been a couple of actions by states. Virginia and Illinois recently made it so that insurers, if they decide to cover proton therapy, can't demand a higher standard of clinical evidence than for other kinds of radiation therapy. So that's something, but there's still not a requirement that they cover it. And this is happening on a state-by-state basis. So in a lot of states, insurers could require a higher standard of evidence because this is more expensive. The federal government could address this if it wanted to, but it doesn't seem like that's going to be a priority in the near term. And if you're an insurance company with the population you insure coming and going, it might make financial sense not to pay more for a radiation treatment up front if the cost savings you're getting will come years down the line with people not having heart issues or brain issues or other vital organ issues that they might have had with less expensive traditional radiation.
Simone, I want to move on to centers that are in the construction pipeline. But before we get into that, I wanted you to speak a little bit about whether or not there's been any evolution of, let's call it, the business model for proton treatment centers.
Yeah, so it used to be you had a lot of standalone centers where what they did was offer proton therapy. Now, this is being adopted in larger cancer centers as a part within them. And this has been made possible in part by technology. Really, only within the last 10 years, it's been possible to put one room in a larger cancer center and offer proton treatment within that room.
So is it accurate to say that historically, they were more like standalone facilities that you might find in a shopping plaza or some other kind of retail development?
I don't know if they were located within retail developments per se, but it would be its own building.
Okay. And what about the projects that are underway, that are in the pipeline?
There are a bunch being built. And as you just mentioned, these tend to be, not in every case, but they tend to be parts of larger cancer treatment centers. So Moffitt, UW Health, Baptist Health South Florida, the Mayo Clinic, which already offers proton therapy in two states. They're looking to open one up in Jacksonville in Florida. Atlantic Health System, Froedtart and the Medical College of Wisconsin, Tampa General, the University of California, San Francisco. These all have new proton treatment centers planned or under construction.
From your standpoint, are these projects now going to be or anticipated to be more successful because they're incorporated within a bigger hospital? Because I'm just trying to figure out the difference between when it was a standalone facility and what happened with operations and what changes now that it's part of a larger hospital and they have this slice that's doing proton therapy treatment.
So you'd have different upfront capital costs if you have a standalone facility and you use the smaller one room model, and you also have a different set of revenues. It's one option rather than the only thing that's generating revenue. So they have lots of things generating revenue, lots of things generating expenses. So you have a bigger buffer, and also you presumably have lower upfront capital costs with the smaller accelerators, with the smaller treatments.
In our pre-production meeting, you mentioned something interesting that I think is just important to note. Doesn't make the projects any better or worse, but I think it is important to note, because now that these proton centers are a part of a bigger hospital, when these bonds per se come to market, they aren't bonds specifically for the treatment center, but the financial viability of that treatment center could affect the finances of the larger hospital. So what I'm getting at is, in the disclosure for the official statements, when these bonds come to market, are they mentioning these treatment facilities, or is it just not discussed?
That is a really interesting question. The Moffitt Cancer Center and UW Health both issued official statements for their projects, and these projects are, in both cases, bigger than just proton therapy centers. With the Moffitt Cancer Center, I found the word proton mentioned exactly once. And with UW Health, I couldn't find it at all. Now, these statements are hundreds of pages long, and I'm not going to pretend I read 400 pages for each of these. I pressed Control F and looked what came up. So I could have missed something, but it's not like in earlier years when this would have been in the obligor name. The other thing is, these aren't always financed by municipal bonds. You have cases where this is grant funded, or I should say donation funded. There was one case where it was a public-private partnership. And in some cases, the centers won't say where the funding is coming from, which struck me as a little bit unusual, right? I mean, usually you say up front, so-and-so gave us the money, or we're getting a loan from wherever they're getting a loan from, but it's just a giant question mark.
And I just want to make sure that I'm clear and putting out this disclaimer that we're not trying to suggest that a large hospital is going to go bankrupt because of a failed proton treatment center. But given the history of proton treatment centers, it just seemed important to at least mention that. And then it's up to the investor or the reader to make a determination as to how important or not important that is. Simone, close this all out. Do you have any final thoughts on proton treatment centers?
I just want to reiterate what you just said. There are at least two of the facilities that are opening new proton therapy centers already have proton therapy centers up and running. Baptist Health, the one located here where I am in South Florida, already has one at the Miami Cancer Institute. They're going to have a grant-funded one up a little bit further north. And the Mayo Clinic already has two up and running, and they're opening a third. So they have already proven that this is sustainable enough to continue to expand their coverage to different parts of the country.
Well, thanks, Simone, for an insightful discussion on the performance of proton therapy centers financed with municipal bonds. Looking forward to an ongoing dialogue on this subject. To our audience, I hope you found this podcast to be informative. Please support us by liking, sharing, and/or subscribing to Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Until the next time, thanks for joining us on the Muni Lowdown.